The time is just about 7:30. We hear next a speech given by Baba Ram Das. The speech was given at Hunter College on March 23rd of this year.
Arjuna says, "In thy mercy, thou hast told me the secret supreme of thy spirit, and thy words have dispelled my delusion. I have heard in full from thee of the coming and going of beings, and also of thy infinite greatness. I have heard thy words of truth, but my soul is yearning to see thy form as God of this all. If thou thinkest, O my Lord, that it can be seen by me, show me, O God of Yoga, the glory of thine own supreme being." Krishna, by hundreds and then by thousands, Arjuna, my manifold celestial forms of innumerable shapes and colors, behold the gods of the sun and those of fire and of light, the gods of storm and lightning, and the two luminous charioteers of heaven. Behold, descendant of Bharata, marvels never seen before. See now the universe with all things that move and move not. And whatever thy soul may yearn to see it all as one in me. But thou canst never see me with thy mortal eyes. I will give thee divine sight. Behold my wonder and my glory." The vision waits for eyes unclouded by longing. The journey of 1,000 miles begins with but a single step. I was recently given a rubber stamp and it says, "Be here now." And I stamp all my letters going out. So the mail department, when they decide to be here now, will receive a message. It's always the requirement to be here now. That's all that's required. It's as simple as that. It's the one instruction. So I have to share with you exactly where my head is at right now. Because where my head is at is where our head is at. And the game of holy man is a very, very complicated game role. I mean public holy man. Real holy men, there's no role involved, it's all roles. But the social role of holy men because if we're all going to be here now, we've all got to be here now behind all of our games. And the one game we have to get behind is that I know and you don't. If you could break the set that you came here because you didn't know, you came here because you already knew we're just going to sit around and reassure each other. Because if you didn't know before you walked in, you're not going to learn it now. When I know that I've turned off my ego is when I'm saying things and I'm looking around and people are doing that inward, yeah, right, that's the way it is, right, that's the, wow, yeah, that's the way it is. Because all we're doing is reiterating to each other, yeah, man, that's the way it is, wow, that's the way it is. And where it is very complicated and very simple. Where it is that we are on the path. And the path is fraught with the most fantastic things. You know, right over the bend is eternal damnation. There are parts that are like a roller coaster. You know? You just get to a high place where you're able to say Krishna's name with love, and the ego walks behind you and pats you on the back and says, pretty good. See, most of us have figured out where we're going now. We just, you all haven't figured out how to get there. But it turns out you don't have to figure out how to get there. Because if you just keep in mind where you're going, you get there anyway. Most of us are full of all kinds of stuff. Our heads are full of, in My Fair Lady they say, hay and rags. It's full of stuff. We get caught in our stuff over and over again. Around me now, everybody's playing a new game of stuff. It's called Worship the Holy Man. It's a very funny game. cosmic humor is really mind-blowing. See, I don't really know who I am being at this moment. I don't understand all of the divine plan at every level. I'm like a water boy on the team. I don't understand how it all is. But I also figured out I don't have to understand it. That all I have to do is be it. And that the more I center, the more I meditate, the more I calm myself, the more I hear how it all is. And even if I don't hear how it all is, the more I be how it all is. So if there is an uneven place in me, all I have to do is work on myself. Just consecrate my acts, move to the center, 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 center. And as I give up attachment to knowing how it all comes out, or knowing how it all works, then the actions come into harmony with the Tao. Most of us are right in the middle. We're halfway between being pulled by worldly desires and virag, where the desires have fallen away. We're right in between, most of us. It's like the abbot said in a monastery, he said, I would like to be, he was very busy with worldly affairs. He said, I want to be one of the desert fathers, that means out in a monastery, meditating. But I don't want what I want just yet. Because I haven't quite finished. I haven't cooked all the seeds just yet. See, eyes unclouded by desire see how it all is. Unclouded by desire, even the desire to see how it all is. Difference between where I'm sitting and where somebody is sitting who thinks they're not me. Is a little thing called faith. All the times that I took acid and got high, I saw all of it again and again and again. I experienced moments of divine play at so many, many, many astral levels and so many, many, many causal planes. Once I recall being in a meditation room and going into a state beyond even bliss of homogeneous light for many hours. And then re-entering in the third bardo to to see a huge blood-red wave rolling down the room towards me. And in the wave was everything I ever was in this lifetime. It was this lifetime. It was the blood-red wave of this lifetime. It was a cross between a William Blake sketch and a Hieronymus Bosch painting. And it rolled down over me, and I held up my hands, I remember, and said, "No, no, I don't want to go back to that." But I didn't know the key. I didn't know the key, and I had nothing to do. I was impotent in the face of this wave, and it just rolled back over me, and then there I was, caught back in the illusion. Now the key, whatever that key was slowly emerging in my consciousness. See, I thought at that time, since my key at that moment was LSD, and since the LSD was wearing off, my key was turning from a key of silver or jewels or golden key to the golden door, was just turning into slish, into dross, into nothing. And I had to wait until I could get the next golden key. But slowly it was dawning on me, not dawning intellectually, but coming to be, that more and more I started to develop a calm place in me from which I watched all the rest. It was the place where you stand on the bridge and you watch your whole life go on under the bridge. See, I was trained as a psychologist, and I came out of what's called the Yale tradition. That is, I was a behaviorist. Now, behaviorists are people who study behavior, and they're studying the psyche of man through the manifestations of his behavior. And so if I follow you around with a clipboard and study your behavior, I will get to know something about your behavior and hopefully something about who it is behind the behavior. Now, when behaviorists have been asked to study themselves, they've gotten frightened. Because historically there was a thing called introspectionism, where people would sit down, Thorndike and others, and they would write down all of their inner experiences. And they would build a body of knowledge about this, but everybody would say it's not science because it's not public, because only you see it. And how do we know that you are not distorting it because of your own desires? And in order to protect us from that terrible problem, we'll only study things that you and I can both see. Okay? Now, this is very comparable, as you know the analogy, I'm sure, to the drunk looking for his watch under the streetlight, although he lost it up the alley. Because it's, of course, lighter and easier to find watches under the streetlight, although it isn't where the watch is. Now, if you run scared about that problem, about studying your own behavior, because of introspectionism, you end up with what a kind of a slightly empty and brittle. It's science. Ah, the lamb's here again. Oh, wow. He always comes. He's beautiful. We're all here again. you end up with kind of a brittle science until finally you realize that what you're going to do anyway is to study your own behavior. And you're slowly going to extricate yourself from the desires that cloud your eyes. And it becomes, in the Gurdjieff system, self-remembering. It becomes, in many other systems, developing the witness. In Oraj, a student of Gurdjieff, it becomes behavioral observation. It becomes developing a calm center. Finally, when we're going to work on ourselves, we see that the first thing we must do is extricate ourselves from our melodrama. We came in here tonight, we all, at some level or other, thought we were somebody or other. And it's only when we know we are not somebody that we become everybody. You have to give up your particular figure-ground relationship to see that all the ground is figure. To see the true gestalt, to see the whole thing, how it all is. I know all that, you know all that. But yet my eye is not single. Because there are still attachments that keep bringing me back to this plane. And being attached to this plane, even though I understand that I am not to reject this plane, but I am to be able to, as the Bhagavad Gita says that I just read, know the gods and goddesses, know all the planes. See how it is that just one plane back, like astrology is the science of heredity. Just go one plane back and you begin to see why all this is. Because each plane is a manifestation of the plane above it. And you go from the sanskaras to the lower manas, the thinking mind, which is just a reflection of the higher manas, which is the reflection of the jivatman, which is a reflection of the mahadatman, which is it. Just the other side of the coin, Purusha and Prakriti, which is one, as Brahma, Param Brahma. We can even now find systems, we're open enough to find systems that satisfy us. But we can't rush the process. My teacher writes on his slate, desire has to fall away as the skin from a snake. You can't rip it off. You can't rip it off. Desire for food, desire for friendship, desire to hang out, desire to have sexual gratification. Desire for smelling spring, desire for hot baths and great luxurious softness, desire for pure food, desire for the light, desire, 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 desire. all we can do is witness it all from the calm center where we all sit eternally. It's just so much stuff. It's all of our desires. That's who we are. We are at this moment the manifestation of our desires. First thing my teacher wrote on his chalkboard, I always say over and over again, because I think about it so often. He said, desire is the trap. Desirelessness is moksha, is liberation. Desire is the creator. Desire is the destroyer. Desire is the universe. And when I see the desires that put me in this predicament at this moment, at one level I can feel horror, but then I say, even that's an attachment. All I can end up feeling is a great sense of the poignancy of the predicament. How poignant. How poignant it all is. It's called compassion. The first being one must have compassion for is oneself. You can't witness with a chip on your shoulder. You can't witness with an axe to grind. See? Ramana Maharshi said, if people would stop wailing, alas, I am a sinner, and use all that energy to get on with it, they'd all be enlightened. And he also said, when you're cleaning up the outer temple before going into the inner temple, don't stop to read everything you're going to throw away. See, we can all get so preoccupied with where we're not. You know, I get letters all the time from people with vivid descriptions of where they're not. The amount of consciousness they invested in writing the letter to describe where they're not. See? But then every now and then I get a letter and all it's filled with is pages and pages of Ram, 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 Ram. And I read every page. What else is there to write? What else is there to write? See, the process for those that have that scientific bent that want it said that way, the process is no other than completely reorganizing your cognitive map so that you see the entire universe from another place. From your divine self. See, because who you were taught you were wasn't your divine self, most of you. Very few of your mothers said to you, you are your divine self. Very few said, when I look at you, I see God. Yeah, right. What is transmitted from parent to child is all the love that can exist within the illusion, which is itself seeking the light. At every level of the illusion, there must be total honor to your karma at every plane. To parents, to religion, to country, to world, to mankind, to the Divine Mother, at every level of her manifestation, there must be honor. You can't get away with bypassing any of it. You can't leave any strings on loose ends. They're just anchors, just karmic anchors. Every time, in order to get from point A to point B, because you see point B is in the light, along the way you leave a bad vibration. Just new karma, creating more of the stuff that entwines you, it keeps you all tied up. If you're coming over here and you're on the subway and you meet a ticket taker or somebody changing money who says something, you're in a rush and she's slow and you get angry and you put her uptight by your anger in order to get here to be holy. See? You see? We see, don't we? I see, don't you? It all costs, because that's who we are. Because we are her as well as us. She's that of us that's in that ticket booth at this moment, with whatever vibrations we've left. You can't look at the desires that still exist as curses, because they are as much a message, a teaching to you, as anything else. There's the distinction made between Satguru and Upaguru. The Satguru is the guru that beckons from beyond. He is the eternal being who is manifest in every form that is called guru. Christ, the master yogi. Buddha, Ramakrishna, Ramana Maharshi, Maharaja. Then there are the Satgurus. The Satgurus are the beings along the way that teach you something. Did you ever look back? I sat in a temple in India once and I made a long list of all the Upagurus I could remember. Because what you'll notice happens is as you get to each new plane of understanding of how it is, you look back and you write your whole biography entirely differently.
WBAI New York.
And now that I see that I am still, there are desires in me that are tenaciously holding on, that are still me in the illusion, and yet I see that within me is light that's breaking out and I'm coming through to the surface like I never had thought possible 9 years ago. Now I look back and I see all the things that happened to me in my life that helped that light emerge. Those are my Upagurus. It was one of my worst enemies at prep school. Somebody who tried to blackmail me. And I suddenly realized that what he was going to do didn't matter. And that freed me. And therefore I must honor him, because he is one of my Upagurus. The Upagurus become all the beings along the way, all the experiences along the way It started to tell you who you really are. Who we really are. Who we really are. My mother was an interesting person. She was a good middle-class woman. And she was, with a vengeance, a good middle-class woman. And yet, lurking inside there was a very high being. But she had no vehicle through which to manifest it. And every now and then, it would break out around the edges. And there we would be, right here. But then we had no form within which to live it. Because in the social roles and all the ways we had learned to relate to one another, what are you going to say? Your God, mother? No, your God? Well, we're both God. Well, here we are. Wow, man. You don't say that as a middle-class mother. It's nonsense. Time enough for that when you go to temple. Now eat your supper. Stop talking about God. Well, I wouldn't have said it anyway in those. Because we were in a conspiracy to deny who we really are. Because it was too scary. Isn't it? Don't you find it that way? You must. It's scary to be light, to be love, to be truth, and to be beauty. Though I speak with the tongues of men and angels, and have not charity, I am become as sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal. And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains and have not charity, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, and have not charity, it profiteth me nothing. Charity suffereth long and is kind. Charity envieth not. Charity vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up, doth not behave itself unseemly, seeketh not her own, is not easily provoked, thinketh no evil, rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in truth, beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things. Charity never faileth, but whither there be prophecies, they shall fail. Whither there be tongues, they shall cease. Whither there be knowledge, it shall vanish away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part. But when that which is perfect is come, then that which is in part shall be done away. When I was a child, I spake as a child. I understood as a child. I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. For now we see through a glass darkly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then shall I know even also I am known. And now abideth faith, hope, charity, these three. But the greatest of these is charity.